found out that Dr. Riskin is in his mid-70s.
Sure. If I'm 75, Riskin is 2-3 years behind me. That's all. Don't let him fool you. The boy wonder, as we used to call him, Stevie Wonder. Yeah, we go back a long way. All right.
It must be his swimming, daily swimming.
The funny story with him is with the Rav. I was an eyewitness when Dr. Belkin tells him, we have the shtela for you, but it's conservative, but I want you to take it. He goes to the Rav. The Rav says, not for you. A week later, the Rav calls him in and says, I was testing your spiritual tenacity. Take it. So everyone is. What went on? I said, it's very simple. Dr. Belkin said to the Rav, Beryl, what are you, crazy? We got a chance to open up a shul on the Upper West Side. If anyone can change it, it's Riskin. So, and as they say, the rest is history. All right, today is a very, very fascinating class. On a different type of fascination, Moshe, than yesterday's class. Yesterday's class, as far as learning and depth, there's no end to what you can build upon what we said yesterday. But today it's fascinating. Today is Monday, the 29th of April, 2013. And once again, ani modeh l'Kadosh Baruch Hu, I overextended myself over the weekend. I was doing a chesed, but you have to know what your limitations are. And Baruch Hashem, I feel better, and I hope by Thursday when I'm speaking at the OU, I'll be perfect. B'ezrat Hanotein Liyov Kolach. Now, and the week afterwards, we have our classes, then I'm speaking in a Tanya, an important talk. It's the second half of the Hashkafa talk on what's going on in Israel today. I want to tell you good news. Here's the document I forgot to tell you a week ago. We spoke about it after class. I was zeicha that a Satma Chassid admitted he made a mistake. And the story is very simple. My Talmud, once again, Dr. Alan Blau, who we quoted yesterday in relation to the Yos Sameach, Dr. Alan Blau bunks into Yonah Landau, the Satma Chassid who wrote the book about RJJ. And he lets Yonah Landau know that his Rebbe is not happy with the book, and how dare you write about the president of Temple Emanuel, Rabbi Yankel Schiff. So Yonah Landau says, quote, he gave a lot of money to Tzedakah, end quote. I said to him, quoting Rebbe, but he was the president of Temple Emanuel. Rabbi Landau then admitted to me that he had made a mistake. I told him about the lectures you gave referencing his book. He was very friendly and interested, and he said he would be happy to discuss with you any topic related to the book or American Jewish history in general. He gives me his phone numbers. I wrote back to my student that if he studies at least my first two books, then I'll be happy to meet with him. But to talk with someone who's coming from Satmar and try to explain to him what the writing of Torah history is about, I don't have time to waste. But if he's serious, we can take it further. Now, there's no question that Rabbanim can have all the great ideas in the world, and Rabbanim can change the history of Torah. But if you don't have Balabatim, you're going to get nowhere. Those of you who recall my lectures on Zionism, which I consider the most profound lectures I've ever given, I'm listening now to Rabbi Miller talk about the Rav and religious Zionism at YU last week, and believe me, I just heard the whole lecture. I wanted to give an addendum to what he said, and I raised the question that 70% of Torah Jews still struggle with. Why did Theodor Herzl have all this success and the Rabbanim, rabbis, Alkali, Kalisha, Moliver, had little success on a practical level? And if you recall, without going involved now with the Midrashim I quoted, but the answer is very simple, that Rabbanim are great dreamers, but they're not practical. Theodor Herzl was a balabas. The minute he was bitten by the Zionist dream, he was very practical. He went to work on a practical level and created a Zionist structure. Rabbi Revel could have had all the dreams in the world, but without, and the three big names I gave you, Fischel, Gottesman, and Lampert, he would have achieved nothing. And these were very three inspiring people. These were people who made it big in America, and as I told you, in the name of, I believe it's your uncle, Rabbi Rachel. Uncle, am I right? Your mother's first cousin. So in the name of Rabbi Aaron Rachel, until 1929, Harry Fischel could do whatever he wanted to do, financially. He didn't have to check his bank account. After 29, with the losses in real estate, and Harry Fischel essentially was in real estate, he had to check his bank account. Doesn't mean he couldn't do, but he was more limited. And how the world was laughing at them. Schnorrers, where are they going to raise $5 million? And we ended off the class with that unbelievable dinner, and there's Harry Fischel going over to Nathan and Samuel Lampert. Samuel Lampert was Nathan's son, but Samuel, of all the children, 10 children, was the most active in Jewish causes, and evidently the wealthiest. And he goes over, and he says, I'm willing to give 30 G and match any amount of money with every, whatever you put up, I'll put up. And Sam Lamport consults with his father, comes back to Harry Fischel and says, Harry, we're going to do something very big. I doubt if you can match it. We are giving $100,000. And on the spot, Harry Fischel matches it. And even the New York Times. And you got to remember, $100,000 today, what's the big deal? If you guys only get $100,000 in salary, you're going to be starving. I mean, we have to be honest. Three kids in day school, there goes $100,000, kiss it goodbye. The greatest impetus, faliyah, for my students is Baruch Hashem in Israel, where you don't have to spend a fortune on day schools and on summer camps. The kids somehow manage. And then they get into a very big summer camp. It's known as the Israeli Defense Forces. So they give you clothing, they feed you. And Rakefet, I have been to Africa, to Lebanon, all expenses paid. Well, that was involved. I had to hold the gun in my hands. But outside of that, all expenses paid. So 100 grand, 1925 money. You're talking like today, $30 million, $40 million. Just think for a moment what we're talking about. Okay, now I just want to end off Harry Fischel. He helped them build on Montgomery Street, helped them build in Washington Heights. He was the layman who literally devoted his life to the yeshiva, to the structures, wasn't involved with the curriculum, wasn't involved with the rebbeim. That was Rabbi Revel's responsibility. But he was the layman par excellence. It just so happens that, again, you can correct me, his great-great-grandson is sitting here. Am I right? I have two greats in it? Correct. Yeah, his great-great-grandson happens to be a graduate of this kollel. So he showed me his mother has... He taught me a new word, the Dovels, if I'm pronouncing it right, not just from Amsterdam Avenue, but from East Broadway as well. When they moved from Montgomery, where he also played a role, I don't know if they had a Dowell then, but it could be there too, he played a big role. Here they are, the corner, what you lay, the cornerstone. The famous picture, it appears in the book that the Yitzchak is familiar with. There is Harry Fischel holding the dowel, and Rabbi Chaim Steppelman, his mother, inherited it. I mean, it's a small world. And she brought it back to Israel, which probably doesn't make Richard Joel very happy, but...
It's in their house in New York.
Oh, it's in their house in New York. Okay, so Richard Joel can be happy that Rakefet is not undermining the yeshiva and bringing it to Israel. All right. Now, I just want to give you one more source on Harry Fishel, what we spoke about. And again, it's beyond words.
I'm the third in the book. I cannot believe
that
philanthropy of this man.
Okay.
Goes and buys a house in the Catskills.
Yeah.
There's no shul, he builds the shul.
Builds the shul in Hunter.
He pays for the whole thing.
Right.
Then
right.
They ask him, remember now, the control of the Jewish world at that time was in the hands of the reform.
Right.
So he's at a meeting of the Montefiore House.
Right.
And they're having a dinner. And this month for the house is to help, like the Hayas, to help.
Right.
He says, this is a sectarian dinner. He says, what do you mean a sectarian dinner? He says, well, if it would be kosher, it would be non-sectarian, because everybody could eat. But sectarian means only Reform can eat. And then he has the chutzpah to tell them, and this is the biggest of the big.
Right.
He says, this building is named for Moshe Montefiore. Moshe Montefiore was a ward of the realm. When he ate with Queen Victoria, he had kosher.
Right.
How come they don't have kosher here?
And from that time on, they made only kosher dinners.
Yeah, and they did the same thing at the joint.
And what about what he built here in Mechaz Harav for Rav Kook?
I know.
What he did for the Chafetz
Chaim. Bucking the Wahlberg. And now, I got to tell you another thing. Well, he made fun of Yankel Shiv had a Yiddish heart.
I told you that.
$25,000 he gave to the Uptown Talmud Torah.
Right. Yankel Shiv was caught between two worlds. There's no question about it. He was raised on the lap of Rav Shimshra Fol Hirsch, and in America, somehow he became a Reformed Jew. But on a personal level, he was very observant. They say that his home was kosher. He was makpid to see that all his children went to a Seder. Everyone came to his house for Hanukkah candle lighting. And I told you, the yahrzeit of his mother, there's Jacob Schiff in the Lower East Side in the Beis Medrash HaGadol. They say, Mr. Schiff, what are you doing here? His carriage is outside, his driver. He says, I have yahrzeit today. I can't hold the yahrzeit in Temple Emmanuel. So he was torn between two worlds. Dorothy Schiff, the owner and publisher of the New York Post, was his daughter. That's the Schiff family. Finally, on the book I quoted last week, I showed the books last week, on page 370, you have a description of the building he built on Park Avenue and 80th Street. And there you can see what the man did. This side, nothing is on top of the second floor. He gave up rentals of, at that time, $12,000 a year. Put it into contemporary money, you're dealing with over $1 million+ a year. But he had to have a sukkah on sukkah. And I don't know, there are many from Jews who live in these big buildings on the east side, and they go to the shul, they cater. I don't know if you know, Gilad Jeshurun brings in a caterer, everyone eats in the sukkah, and here is Harry Fishel building a building. It's worth, do you know if that still exists? It's worth going Park Avenue and 80th to look at that building just to show dedication.
Is he the sugar daddy, as the expression goes, for Ramaz? When Luxton came in?
No. He was with Yeshiva and Yeshiva College.
Yeah, but his son-in-law, Cass, was the president of the shul.
I would imagine he gave money, but the real heavy money went to Yeshiva and Yeshiva College. That was his baby. That's a major institution. With all due respect to Ramaz, it's a day school. Don't overstate the case. Kilat Jeshurun is a shul, but YU is changing the face of American Orthodoxy. That's where the Meitshita taught, that's where Reb Shimon Shkup taught, that's where Reb Moshe Soloveitchik taught, that's where Moreinu v'Rabbeinu taught. That's a different ballpark. Okay. Let me go one step further. They succeed. They did not raise $5 million. They raised $3 million. A good deal of the $3 million was in pledges. The college opens Chanukah Tabayit, Hanukkah 1928. A magic moment. Yeshiva starts to flow. Beautiful campus. A college. But you now have a revolutionary moment in the history of Torah. And let's devote the rest of this year to trying to understand this revolutionary moment. And let's put it into eternal context. Thank God the Rav went to Berlin, where he was exposed to Hegel and Kant. And as I said in my talk on Shabbos in Caesarea, thank God the Israelis are a bunch of jerks. That's why I'm standing here before you giving this talk. Rakefet had the guts to say that in Caesarea, and there's a crowd. Multi-millionaires. You don't live in Caesarea if you're a pauper. Bunch of idiots. Josh, what was I saying? Spell it out. 1935, the Rebbe was the candidate for the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, had those dummies elected him. Rakefet wouldn't exist. He'd be Rothkopf. Maybe Shachar, Schwartz, but not Rakefet. Thank God the Rav lost, and a little kid from the Bronx could get on a 36 bus, drop in a nickel. 20 minutes later, he'd be on Amsterdam Avenue, walk the few blocks from 180th to 185th, and as you know from the pictures that I've published, the Rav sat here, and I sat there. Closest to the Rav. The Rav couldn't get out or get in unless I stood up for him. And Rebbe taught us something in all his talks, Hashkafa talks. Life is an ongoing process. Life does not stand still. All of us, my age, the changes we have seen. What it was like growing up after World War II. Michael Hecht and I were among the only frum kids in the Bronx. How many frum kids did you have? You could count it, put a few hands together, you could count it. And most of the frum kids were survivors. Half of them didn't know what they were doing. Half of them were running away. It's a different world today. Life is filled with thesis, antithesis or antithesis, and then you reach a synthesis. And this is ongoing. And that's exactly what's happening in the state of Israel. I've gotten so many favorable comments on my analysis, because it takes the sting out of it. If you don't understand what's happening, you can blow your brains out. Apikorsim, Goyim, each one hits the other over the head. Parasites. Our politicians have outdone each other in maledictions. And I mean Rav Ovadia too. On that level, he's a politician. It's not Rav Ovadia that we idolize. But what's happening is very simple. Torah has matured in a new context. The state of Israel. The year 2014. There are tremendous challenges. How do we work it out? The surveys all show within 20, 30 years, Shomrei Shabbos people will be the majority of the citizens of the state of Israel. We're going to hit that majority sooner than you think. There are over 2 million Shomrei Shabbos today. Haredim are going to be a very powerful force. Well, if you're a powerful force, you got to run the economy, you got to run the army, you got to run the defense. World's in conflict. How do you adjust? And this goes on time and again when we came out of the ghetto. Mendelssohn, as I've said 1,000 times, if you take the attitude that Mendelssohn was an apikairis, when I learned in Lakewood, I thought his last name was Yimach Shmo. Mendelssohn was the Ramah's great-grandson, not great-great, great-grandson, 4 generations, named after the Ramah, Reb Moshe. He was a Shoyma Mitzvah 1,000%. His wife covered her hair down to here. I don't see all wives covering their hair like that. We're happy if they, Baruch Hashem, wear a hat, wear a tichel. All right, my wife puts on a shekel occasionally. It doesn't make me happy, but all right. She feels, a wedding of a grandson, you have to wear a shekel. Nice, okay. Tremendous challenges to Mendelssohn. And it took a long time to work out the synthesis. And if you recall my lectures on the Besamim Rosh, which again are probably among my best lectures ever, the Besamim Rosh was born before his time. If there would have been a YU around, he would have been the Rosh Yeshiva today. And instead, because of when he was born, he winds up committing suicide. And I remember I got correspondence from students who did research that his son also committed suicide. We're fortunate. We could grow up, YU, synthesis. This is a tremendous challenge. And it takes time. It doesn't develop overnight. All this yelling and shouting in Israel, it's a natural process. And watch. In 50, 60 years, you're going to say, wow, my Rebbe was so smart. Not smart. Just logical. You can't escape it. The synthesis develops. Now, I want to show you an amazing source. And with this source, we'll have a jumping board to jump into the waters of Yeshiva and Yeshiva College. How many of you are from Columbus, Ohio? Who is the legendary Rav in Columbus, Ohio for many, many decades? Rav Yehuda Greenwald. Recognize the name? Unum Garasha. A big Talmud Chacham. Besides learning, and he was an Adam Gadol in Psak, he had a feeling for Jewish history. Wrote biographies of Gedolei Yisrael, for instance, the Maram Shik, others. He was from the Talmidei Talmidim of the Chatam Sofer. He wasted away in Columbus, Ohio. That's a different story. Ultimately, was very unhappy there, very angry, never got the recognition he deserved. And I'm told that his extensive rabbinic library winds up in Hebrew Union College in Cincinnati. Evidently, they evidently bought it from the Yarshim, who had no qualms selling it or donating it to Hebrew Union College. Every rabbi in America from the 1930s on was Makar Tova to Rav Greenwald. Look, who can tell me why? How many of you have been in the rabbinate? And I don't mean in the New York rabbinate, Borough Park, Flatbush. That's a dream. But you leave New York, you leave the big city, 80% of the questions you get will be on Avelot. They're unbelievable questions today. When do you start Shiva? You're not going to the funeral. My brother died in Los Angeles. I just found out the funeral's tomorrow. Translated today. My aunt died, my uncle died, I only use a close relative name. When does my mother start Shiva? The body is being shipped to Israel. They're not, my mother's not going, she's not healthy enough to go to make the trip now. When do you start Shiva? I have 2 homes. I have a home in Israel and a home in New York. I want to sit Shiva in both places. When can I travel? The shyness you get with Avelot. I'm a rabbi. I have a Siddur Kedushin during Shleishim. Can I be Masada Kedushin? I'm a rabbi. The Bans are having a meeting, or like it's described, the Montefiore House. I'm the guest speaker. It's a big dinner, big Simchat Mireyot. All the multi-billionaires are going to be there. Can I give the speech? And then you can multiply. Here, a Shaila that I've gotten this sphere 50 times over. Remember a few weeks ago on a Thursday night, I went to a wedding, and I never go to weddings outside of Yerushalayim. I just don't have the energy. I'm 75. But this wedding I went to. David Applebaum, Hashem Yikom Damo, his youngest daughter. You went to a wedding? Schwarzkopf, Shachar. I invented a golem as a result of Rabbi Breuer, because I really feel bad for him. He's a genius. And I love genius shtick. You follow me? That he can invent a golem and join the rabbinic fellowship. And now they claim he has another golem. So I invented a golem too.
And it's not really such a big deal.
Yitzchak, let me see you invent a golem and get him to be an official member of the rabbinical fellowship of Chovevei Torah.
Silly question, but a person applies for something
right.
Like that. Don't they ask for a copy of your smicha?
Beside, you take your smicha, you Xerox it, you paste it up. What I can do today, I'll give it a toy. You can give it a toy, give it a name, and give it smicha. What's the big deal? I'll take my smicha, Yeshiva's Chochanan, Xerox it, cut out my name, paste over your name, and here you are, smicha. You have smicha, okay? I'll give you my smicha from Rav Yaakov Moshe Kohen lesson, okay? It's unbelievable. So, I got so many shilas. How could I go to the wedding? I hold the first 33 days, Omer, morning. How can you go to the wedding? Yesterday, I davened mincha in Mechon Lev. A young man comes over to me from South Africa. I tell you, I have so many people in my Talmidim. I nimod ala Kaddish Baruch Hu. Rebbe, I have a shayla. For him, it's a serious shayla. He's invited to a wedding this week. And he holds the last 33 days available. Can he go to the wedding? No, these are serious questions. And they all are about avelut. La halacha, I just want to tell you, as far as sphere goes, you can go. Rav Meisha, everything goes back to Rav Meisha on that, but it's very simple to be Mesameach, Chasson V'Kala, maybe a Chiv the Oraita. If it's not the Oraita, it's at least the Chiv Mitivrei Kabbalah. Right or wrong? Avelet on Sfira, the Rambam doesn't even mention it, so it's alright, it's a Minog, but it doesn't equal being Mesameach, Chasson V'Kala. So you can go. But alright, it is an unhappy feeling if you hold the avelut for 33 days and you're at a wedding, but okay. The gabbai of my shul, I thought, was very upset. He said to me, if David hayabachayim lo yamashetza. So amati lo tishan la tagishelcha. This is Rav Liyah. So Rav Liyah, an Odom Gadol, Rav Dov Liyah, Chevron, Akirat Hava. So he asked his brother, says, hey, Jesh poskim kacha, Jesh poskim kacha. So I wrote out for him, look into the Igrot Moshe. Reb Moshe takes a stand. And he was happy afterwards. Gentlemen, Rav Yehuda Grunwald did a big chesed for all the Rabbonim in America. He published a volume called Ach Litzara. Rabbi Rubin never heard of the volume, and Rabbi Wiener never heard of the volume, because Ach Litzara was the first edition. I had it originally. I got rid of it. You'll see why. It was received so warmly by so many rabbis that he then expanded it into three volumes. And this is the volume you know, Kol Bo Al Avelut Shel Rav Yehuda Grunwald. Okay. Open up the Kol Bo Al Avelut. Take a look at it. Chelik Sheni. beginning on page 139, and take a look at the she'elah he got, and look at the digression he engages in, and look at the mud he flings at a YU graduate, a young rabbi. Nishaltim mi rabbi echad. When anyone calls me a rabbi, I smack their face. It's the greatest insult. A rabbi? What am I, a reform rabbi, conservative rabbi? That's what he means here. Rabbi. Not a rav. In Israel, if you call the rav, it's the greatest insult. Because if you read the Haredi press, everyone and his mother is Harav Hagon. Follow me? It's unbelievable. Gentlemen, never, ever call me Harav Hagon. You know my story with Lenny Matanki. He introduces me, Harav Hagon. So I tell him afterwards, that's Harav Hagon. I had just been at a Brit in Israel, and everyone's Harav Hagon, and the Harav Hagon couldn't even say the bracha. Didn't know how to read Ifra. So he writes me a letter. He needed a source. I even remember what source. So he writes me a letter a few weeks later. L'chvot Harav Hagon HaGadol. He underlines HaGadol. I shouldn't be offended. But anyway, this is done to offend. I was asked with a rabbi, a young man born in America, who lost his mother. He's in Shloshim. And the community has a big dinner. And he is the rabbi who will do the benediction. Is he allowed to go? And Rav Gruval goes crazy. Doesn't answer. He answers him at the end. Tells him he can go. But benediction? You got to see it to believe it. Whoever heard of a benediction? What are you, crazy? Netilat Yadayim. A bracha. And then he says, let me explain to the reader if he doesn't know what a benediction is. And he describes typical American scene. Everyone is seated. And the rabbi now makes the benediction. Everyone rises. And sometimes it's not just the rabbi, but he makes half the benediction and his wife makes the second half. And they bless the Lord. He uses the word here, Lord blas. They bless the Lord that he has given them a beautiful meal. And then he describes the fresses. That generally speaking, it's a big chicken meal. You got to remember that among the Jews, chicken was considered more chashuv than meat. It's interesting. You know, I remember when we learned RJJ, I explained to you the korach tax was on the chicken, not on the meat. That was considered the luxury. In Israel, it's just the opposite. At the Applebaum wedding, they gave you a choice of chicken or steak. And my Yetzahara, I haven't eaten steak in so many years. And my wife looked at me, I ordered the steak. Kasha avadati, avadati. And let me tell you, it brought back memories of Shmulka Bernstein, Zichronen Tzadikim Levracha. So he describes here, they eat the chicken meal, and they turn it into a gal shel atzamot, a pile of chicken bones. He is so cynical. Then he says about the rabbi, what kind of mamaretz is he? He doesn't know. You have to wash. You can't interrupt. You can't speak. By the way, halacha, I don't know if he's correct. If you're a briska, tell me, Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, after he washes, he makes a motzi right away, or he'll talk? You ask him, okay? Because if my memory is correct, the briska concept was that there's a takana, the ki yadayim. But once the yadayim and the ki, you can speak. Then you make a motzi when you're ready. You ask him, okay? Alachat kama v'kama, You can give a benediction, you can talk about the Lord, and then you'll make an official motzi. But what he does to this rabbi, and then he tells him, you can go, you can't eat shloshim, but you'll sit there, you'll speak, you try to give them a little yirat shamayim, and then he goes into a discourse, what has happened to the American rabbin. The graduates of the yeshiva, meaning the Bishol Chalim, they become like conservative rabbis. They give benedictions. They forget about Netilat Yadayim. They forget about a motzi. I've given benedictions. I would do it in a way. We are now about to thank the good Lord for all that he has bestowed upon us. We will recite the traditional blessing that our rabbis have taught us. Baruch, and then you make a bracha, you can add a little English. Motzi lechem min haaretz. Cut into the bread. But then he goes into a lot more than the benediction. These rabbis, they introduced English prayers. And he describes the synagogue, probably in Columbus, Ohio, where the rabbi says, everyone rise. And there are people there don't understand English. Vashtein nishtavart. Greenhorns. Johnny come latelys, particularly fancy English. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. No, but what does that mean to a greenhorn? And he says the rabbi makes them stand. Idiocy. Worse than that, the rabbi, how does he deal with his congregation? First name basis. John, how are you? I saw Shabbos, young rabbi. Every balabas who walked in, pats him on the back. There's mainly Sfardim in this area, the only ones that go to Shul Shabbos. There are a few Ashkenazim, Americans, Balei Tshuva. Mainly Sfardim, they don't come Israel. Hugs them, kisses them, they kiss the rabbi. A guy gets an aliyah, he walks around the whole shul, kissing everyone's head. Saw it with my own eyes. First name basis. Johnny, Mike, Butch, nickname. He's going crazy. By the way, it's a very interesting question. How do you relate to your balabata? And he says there are even shuls where the balabatim called the rabbi by his first name. See, and I'm very makpid. Whenever I was a scholar in residence, the rabbi, my Talmud, I would never call him by his first name in public. Always call him rabbi. In front of his balabatim, he's the rabbi. In private conversation, it's my Talmud. That's a different story. When we talk baseball, he may be a jerk. Like Rakepit was a jerk. I thought the Yankees wouldn't win one game this year. Yitzchak, don't listen. You don't understand what's going on. Now, a kid grew up in Boston with Ted Williams and has a shteik nishtavot. I'm going to talk Thursday night. The Rav knew more about baseball than Yitzchak Rubin. So, but you understand? Yeah, we were jerks. Yankees, mind-boggling. What's going on? All right. He is going crazy. Then he describes the Bar Mitzvah ceremony. He says, rabbis have introduced, instead of Baruch Shapatrani, they make a Shechiyanu together with the parents. A Shechiyanu on what? That the kid now became a Mechalel Shabbos. He says, until now the kid was a Katan. It's not Chayav. Now he becomes officially a Gadol, officially a Mechalel Shabbos. And at the end, on page 143, he shoots at one of his own colleagues. And you can understand his frustration. He's in Columbus, Ohio. Something we've spoken about. who was the head of the Agudas Rabbanim? Who was the leading Americanized Orthodox Europeisha Rav? Israel Levin, Rabbi Bernard Leventhal, Harav Dov Aryeh HaKohen Leventhal. Who was his son? Rabbi Israel Leventhal. JTS. And he writes, Echad Mimanugei HaRabbanim HaChareidim Shalachat Beno LeBeit Seminar. Got ordination, rabbi of a big shul in Brooklyn. And the old man praises his son and treats him with such respect. We yell from today to tomorrow. Nothing helps. The doors of the Beit Midrash are closed. No rabbi learns after he gets ordination there. The mikvah, who uses it? Everything we planted is gone. Reformon Alecha, Conservatim Alecha, Rabbanim Madirnim Alecha, Yisrael. Wow, I think this is the first recorded public attack on modern Orthodoxy in the history of the United States. Conservatives, Reform, modern rabbis. It's the end of Torah and tradition.
I heard when I was in Columbus that Grunwald had a lot of Agmas Nefesh over the pizza.
Yeah, no, no. What are you talking about? Rabbi Stavsky came in afterwards. It's a whole story. He had a right to be embittered. Take my word for it. But listen, you're from Holyoke and Rabbi Yehuda Leib Feuer. You know what I told you. It's the biggest gadol ever to set foot in America. And you can find stationery of the conservative temple where he's listed as the rabbi. You know what I told you? They wouldn't hire a full-time rabbi. They were the children of the founders. They said the Rebbe, the Kozman, the Rebbe left, is ein Tumserav. They wouldn't hire. They brought in a conservative guy, English speaker, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Chametz they only sold by the Rav. Any funeral was the Rav. Siddur Kedushin was the Rav. But that was America.
Shows.
Yeah, that was, yeah, they had a temple. But he didn't daven in the temple, but he was listed as the official spiritual leader. Rabbi Yehuda Leib Feuer was the Rav trembled in his presence. Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik called him the biggest bucky alive. Rabbi Lazar Silva, who was a posek mufak, vased keken, wouldn't paskin a difficult shaila without calling Holyoke and conferring with Rabbi Yehuda Leib Feuer. He was the childhood chavruta of the Meitzer Te'iloi by Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik. He gave, I read a memoir in class here from him. He described the Meitzer he comes in to shtibble and Rabbi Chaim is sitting in learning. You know, they didn't have formal shim. Rabbi Chaim's sitting in learning and they're sitting around him and the Meitzer seems to be asleep. And after Rabbi Chaim struggles with the Rambam, he says, Shleimela, Vekuf, wake up, what do you think? And in 1 minute, the Meitzer solved all problems. This is what we're talking about. Gentlemen, was the Columbus Rav correct? And you see, what you have here is the tremendous challenge, thesis and antithesis. Thesis, Yiddishkeit, Torah, purity. Yitzhak and I are only sitting here because of Shanghai, because of Semple Sugihara Zeket Tzadik Levracha. What we saw in our Rebbeim, I saw in Salanta, Yitzhak saw in Maimonides. Purity. Sincerity. Kulo Torah. What I write about in Washington, we were kids. We didn't know. What did we know? We were third generation Americans. But our souls sought purity. We deciphered purity. These Rebbeim, what did they know? They couldn't speak English, didn't know baseball. But they knew that a kid has an ishah. But are we like our Rebbeim? Am I like our Fishman, Rav Yankelevich, Rav Bornstein? Rabbi Yeruchim Gorelick, the famous one. I am and I'm not. The thesis is the same. The antithesis was very different. And the synthesis that I worked out, of course, unique. Unique to my generation. That's Torah. How do we say it in modern Hebrew? What was the aphorism I taught you? Oto geveret bishinui aderet. Never forget it. It's a modern Hebrew writer came up with it. The Rav used to say. The Rav was very dramatic. They viewed Yiddishkeit, an old lady, broken over, bent over. But we dressed up that old lady. We put lipstick on. We put on a nice dress. We resuscitated the old lady. It's a beautiful thought. And this is the reality. And this happens all the time. And you can walk away very bitter calling everyone Yimach Shmo and think that you have a monopoly on truth. Or you can walk away. It's what the Rav taught us. We have a viewpoint. We're struggling. There are other viewpoints out there. David Miller just told the story in New York that his wife, he said he never revealed this before, but when his wife was studying at Harvard years ago, she got her master's there. Miriam. So Miriam asked the Rav, Rebbe, I grew up in Chorev, and we studied Kol Dodi Dofek. Will there be a third Churban? How do we know? How do we know for sure that what's happening now will last? So David Miller said, had she asked Rav Cook, he would have said, absolutely, as Rav Kefet writes in the Silver Era, quoting Rav Herzog, there will never be a third Churban. If she asked the Satmar Rebbe would say, of course there'll be a third Churban. It's Maisa Sutton here. She asked the Rav. The Rav thought and thought, said, I don't know what to answer you. I don't know what to answer you. I don't want to say anything. God forbid, I'm not smarter than the Rav. I would have answered her. Open the Rambam. Pernu, help me out. Hilchot Malachim. Perik Yudbet. Halacha Bet. That's what I would have answered her. With me, Mark. You know what I'm talking about. Where the Rambam says, Tipak Lucham Shemachashvei Kitzim. We won't know until we live it. And all right, we're living, I don't know, seems to me, great miracles. Six million Jews, the whole world in turmoil, and Baruch Hashem. We can run a marathon here, and thank God, it's beautiful. Just disturbs people who have to drive. Yes, yes,
it's hard. Sorry to interject. Before the Rambam, there was a fellow called Amos, chapter 9, and he says, and this is in the Chumash, I mean in Tanakh, which it was
okay.
That we will be planted in the land, never to be plucked up again.
Okay, there's Amos, there's the Heskel Lamed Zion. But the Rav, Heskel, the Samatayi Veshat, but the Rav was a brisker. And he told her, I don't know. Okay, gentlemen, what is Rav Columbus, Ohio, Rabbi Grunwald, what does he have to do with Yeshiva and Yeshiva College? All right. There's now a new reality. And at times, it is challenging. You have to understand. There is now a yeshiva and a college under one roof. This has never happened before in recent history. Now, Danny Schulman is going to yell at me, Rebbe, what about the rabbinic seminaries? What about Hildesheim? What about Vienna? What about the Hochschule? There's only one difference. The university education, nothing to do with the seminary. Yes, you didn't get ordination from the rabbinic seminary in Berlin unless you got a PhD from a neighboring university. Who is never, ever under one roof. More than that, excuse me, and this comes back to that lecture many weeks ago, Rabbi Revel would not allow it to be a Catholic college. Revel really didn't have a choice. In other words, I want to be honest, it could be in his inner heart he would have enjoyed a Catholic college. He was not like the Rav. The Rav, in public, in theory, and explaining himself, was totally opposed to a Catholic college. University has to be total freedom of thought. Revel, in order to get a charter, probably had to have an open university. There was no concept of a Catholic college for Jews. Had to get state accreditation. But it was not a Catholic college. It meant that in Yeshiva College, and this continues until today, the faculty has absolute academic freedom. You see with Cardozo Law School, the students, whoever honored Jimmy Carter. To honor Jimmy Carter is an affront to every YU graduate living in Israel, and there are thousands upon thousands upon thousands living in the state of Israel today. But academic freedom, that's what Richard Joel answered. And he's right, there's nothing he can do. As much as Rakefet is angry, there's nothing you can do. Either it's academic freedom or you have to run a Catholic college. So, for the first time, you're going to have problems. And let me give you certain tangible examples on a secular level. No, you study Freud. How can you have courses in psychology without Freud? Who was Freud? Married to the granddaughter of one of the Gedolei Yisrael, Chacham Bernays. He wouldn't let his wife light Shabbos candles. She inherited the candelabra from her grandmother, like you showed me. Wouldn't let his wife light Shabbos candles. Darwin's theory of evolution. No. Can you teach that? And those are minor problems. Tell me, Biyarek, Aharam, I spent a whole year studying Bialik's poetry. Spent a whole year studying Aharam's essays. Aharam was a gone in learning. Asher Ginsberg was a shtut rav, was Masonic hidden. He wanted to go to gymnasium. His parents, Chassidish, told him of our dead bodies. When they dropped dead, he went to gymnasium. Threw most of it away. You've read his essays. He's a fabulous, middle-of-the-road, conservative Jewish thinker. He was a Shomer Shabbos. I'm not denying that. Bialik, Al-Saf Beis HaMedrash, the Matmid. It all belongs to the past. It's all over. No? Modern Hebrew literature. How can you not teach Bialik? How can you not teach Aharam? I can tell you worse than that. In parentheses, I once discussed some of Aharam's essays with David Lifshitz. He knew them by heart, word by word. Draw your own conclusions. Read part of Nassim Kamenetsky's writings about his father-in-law. But these are real problems. And Yeshiva was criticized. If you look into, let me give the credit to Yitzchak Shachar, and you saw the Land of Legacy, what they said about Yitzchak Shachar's work on Rabbi Revel. And it is a fabulous work. Wow. I'm overwhelmed that someone could put out such a fine piece. And if you don't believe my estimation of Shachar's work, look into The Land of Legacy by Peter Weiss. Just came out, page 100. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, we spoke about him yesterday. 1938, visited America, 37, 38. Wrote letters to many of the biggest Orthodox wealthy people, such as Beryl Manashevitz, Hirsch Manashevitz, the son. Don't give a penny to YU. They teach uppie courses. What great age. Bialik. Haram. Modern Hebrew literature. And Manashevitz wrote a letter to Mr. Tsar. Is this true or isn't true? And it was true. Darwin already and Freud become minor problems. But this is a college. But more than that, come to a very delicate area. An area that we struggle with until today. Lubavitch. No. You take some of the wealthiest Jews in the world. They became Hasidim of the Rebbe. And they gave Lubavitch, it's a whole group, that gave Lubavitch each one over $1 million a year. Some of them were total Mechalalei Shabbos. Not their fault. Tinoka Chenishbu, raised without a nuance of Yiddishkeit or learning. But the Rebbe told them for Jewish continuity, and then, you know, I don't want to mention names now, but you take the Lauter Foundation. I don't know if anyone has done more for Yiddishkeit than the Lauter Foundation over the world today. And I'm told that it was the Rebbe who first got him involved. I know others. No. Do you honor such people? Rabbi Mark Wiener, Lieutenant Colonel. Rabbi in a shul in Chicago. New area outside of Skokie. They're building an Orthodox shul. Along comes a Jew and gives him $1 million. Memory of his parents. They now have a dinner in honor of this Jew. $1 million. Yeah, but he's a Mechalel Shabbos. Do you have the right to honor him? Aren't they going after Lubavitch today? You're following the websites? What's going on? That they don't want commitment. Yiddishkeit without commitment. They're accusing Lubavitch. Yeah, you warm up, you know. What's the new word they use? Not judgmental. All right. You do our thing, we do our thing. I tell the story of Florida, Bal Harbor. You've heard of Bal Harbor? You've seen the shoe. Chaim, if you've never seen a shoe in your life, make a trip instead of to Denver, to Bal Harbor, and you see that shoe. You see within the shoe, they brought over a shtibble from Poland with, The davening begins 9:30, finishes 1. All eyes are focused upon Rabbi Lipska. He's what Rabbi Grunwald calls in his critique, an actor. So my good friend, the Jackie Gluck, MTA graduate, a frum boy, I mean he's hitting 70, a frum young man, Jackie Gluck, stavening in the shul, he moved to Bal Harbor. And this guy next to him, black hat, Gartel, the works. And he sees the guy, Dovins, he's looking at the rabbi, and he gets to talking with him, where do you live? Turns out he drives 25 minutes on Shabbos morning to get the shul. This is his rabbi, black hat. Jackie was so upset, he walked around the corner and organized the Young Israel. They're now in a big building campaign. But you have room, there's room for two. The shul, which you'll never equal, and you can have a little Young Israel. No? Yeshiva. How do you get money? How do you get money? People suggested, two different members of the Board of Trustees suggested to, this is what I'm told, I don't mention names, let's say that, give an honorary degree to Yitzchak Shachar. Deserves it. So yeshiva can't give an honorary degree to Yitzchak Shachar because he's on the yeshiva faculty. Could you imagine that's all they need? If you're on the faculty, it's kind of a sin of a mice of Bereisha. But I want to ask you a different question. Yaakov, You have a good friend, a businessman. You suggest to Richard Joel, Richard, give him an honorary degree. You know what the answer is going to be? A businessman, nice man. Let's talk. Can he give a $2 million? $2 million. It used to be $1 million. You got an honorary doctorate. $2 million, an honorary doctorate. You need publicity. You need wealthy guys. Tell me, 33, 34, who did the yeshiva honor with honorary degrees? Albert Einstein? Herbert Lehman. Who is Herbert Lehman? Let's start with that. Governor of New York, Senator of New York, President of Temple Emanuel. And he was no Yankel Schiff. He knew nothing about Yiddishkeit. To give Herbert Lehman an honorary doctor? Albert Einstein. He already was nothing, not reformed, not conservative. Certainly not orthodox. But Jewish feeling. Albert Einstein. What are you saying to the students? Kazer re'ev kadesh. M'chalalei Shabbos. Ochlei nevelet utreifat. Boel bilot asurat. Don't have to elaborate. No Shabbos, no kashrut, no tarat mishpacha. And you're giving an honorary degree? And you're saying to Ephraim, be like these guys. Just think. Tremendous problem. Look into Bernard Revel. Page 135. Look into Bernard Revel. This is Rabbi Revel speaking. He's now charging Albert Einstein. Albert Einstein, chosen and serene spirit, seer and reinterpreter of the cosmos, lover and beloved of nature and man, voice of the enlightened conscience of striving humanity, and devoted champion of the cause of your people, etc. Exiled from your home and the land to which you have brought honor and glory, you have made an abiding place for yourself in the hearts of your fellow man and of the generations to come. The generation in which you live is not spiritually orphaned. Infinitely richer are they who have come within the sphere of your comprehending and radiant spirit. Yeshiva College rejoices and welcomes you to its academic fellowship. The trustees and faculty of Yeshiva College have dedicated to me the deep satisfaction of conferring upon you, master and servant of humanity, the honorary degree of Dr. Humane Letters, and to place upon your shoulders our academic symbol of our deep affection and high regard. And Shachar adds, and after the ceremonies, Einstein whispered to Revel, quote, you have said about me that which you wish me to be rather than that which I am. What? Now you think about this. Right or wrong? Thesis and antithesis. Albert Einstein. The words. By the way, Rabbi Revel was not capable of such English. I told you, we had a ghostwriter, Professor Shipley, who was on the faculty, the original faculty of the yeshiva. I still interview Professor Shipley. I don't believe he was Jewish, or his father was Jewish, his mother not. He was a bohemian character. But his command of English was unbelievable. He was Rabbi Revel's ghostwriter. Of course, the speeches of Rabbi Revel, with all due respect to Rabbi Belkin and to Normie Lamb and to Richard Joe, they don't equal the immigrant's English. But it's not Rabbi Revel. Look into Bernard Revel, where Shachar put all the speeches together. You'll see the English is just astounding. It's Joe Shipley. But, Lou, how do you feel about this? Would you honor Albert Einstein? Would the Lubavitcher Rebbe honor Albert Einstein? I don't know. Would I speak these words? I might add an addendum. And Professor Einstein, we look forward to you participating in the Yeshiva's march of knowledge of our aged, hallowed, magnificent tradition that has sustained our people until this day. Maybe if I add that on, I don't know. I want you to know, it engendered tremendous controversy. The Isaacs family, you've heard the Isaacs family, they were professors at Harvard. They're from Jews living in Israel. Danny, I've taught members of the family. They bitterly attacked Rabbi Revel. I quote, 1 second. Here's a letter that Rabbi Revel got from Dr. Nathan Isaac of Harvard. Once more, I regret that I cannot see eye to eye with you in this matter of honorary degrees. They don't mean much at best, but at worst, they are a declaration to the student body that success in politics, business, or science will win the approval of their alma mater, even if they disregard the Judaism that she has taught them. The unfortunate implication is made more pointed rather than less, where the degree is not clearly a scientific one, but rather one that puts your stamp of approval on a man's personal and moral traits. And remember, doctor of humane letters. Interesting question. I'll take the question a second, Danny. I just want to say, miraculously, 80 years after all this happened, this press question has been ameliorated to a certain degree. Because with the miracle of the synthesis, we now have multi-billionaires who wear black hats. V'day l'chakima b'remisa. We've come a long way. Yeshiva today, most of its money, its heavy money, you follow me, Josh, comes in from Jews who are 100% Shomer Torah in Mitzvah. It's very fascinating. We've come a long way. Harry Fishel was one in a million. Today, out of a million Jews, there are 10 Harry Fishels. It's a little bit different. So it could be, to a certain degree, this is ameliorated. But this problem that's on, by the way, in response to literature, you will find endless questions of this nature. Can you honor a Reformed Jew? Can you take money from Reformed Jews? Michalak had the question. Rabbi Louis Applebaum, Zichrono Livracha, their fundraiser, got a heavy donation from a Reformed synagogue from Michala in Yerushalayim. And Rabbi Ovadia wrote a big tshuva. Under what conditions are they allowed to take that money? So it's a delicate question, but certainly at the stage of thesis versus antithesis, the question hung fire with intensity and with conflict. And that letter from Professor Nathan Isaacs is a prime example of very important, good religious Jews who found fault with Rabbi Revel on this issue. Yes, Danny.
pictures of Einstein and Revel? Is that from this?
Yeah, it has to be. I have to see the picture, but it's from the honorary doctorate, of course. I have the picture in Bernard Revel. I have the picture in Bernard Revel. What's beautiful is the humility of Einstein, where he says, what you have said about me is what you wish me to be, not what I am. That's a very nice comment. But this is a problem. Problem goes further. Problem comes back to the Majid. Never forget what I told you, what I write about in Washington, why it's documented in memoir literature. Rav Shlomo Palachek comes to the yeshiva from Brooklyn. He came in by subway from Williamsburg. Students were always with him. And it's a beautiful spring day in New York after a long winter. It's about 20 to 9. Yeshiva begins at 9. And tens of students are playing punch ball, stick ball, right in front of the yeshiva. And the Maichita takes in the sight. And he says to the Talmidim surrounding him, Fabas hab mir nicht gespürt. Wir haben gewonnen, dasselbe Talmidim gekommen. Aber wir haben damals gehabt, a Jugend. Translation. Why didn't we play when we were kids? We would be the same Talmidim Chachamim today, but we would have had a beautiful youth. And this is a very profound statement. Tell me, did the Rav play baseball in his youth? Stickball, handball, whatever they played in Europe? I doubt it. Did Rav Moshe Feinstein play ball? I doubt it. Could be Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky played. He already was a little different. Then you read the memoir, you read Making of a Gadol, and if you knew Rav Yaakov, it's a little bit different. It's a different individual. But you know, it is hard to grasp. I was sports editor of the Academy News. I was the assistant manager of the basketball team. Yeshiva boys, basketball team, fencing. In my time, the top fencer is a medical doctor today, lives in Israel. Davi Hartman, Halavai, he would have gone ahead with his basketball career. And you speak with him of awe today. They used to call him the Jewish Bob Cousy. That's like saying the Jewish Ted Williams. Today, Yeshiva has a baseball team. Who can believe it? If you don't believe me, there's a picture downstairs of the baseball team.
I used to see the rowing team from Ford on the Columbia down the river. So why doesn't Washington?
Why are you a rowing team? Ain't of herself. Now this too.
Cambridge.
Yeah, all right. This too.
Little Charles River in New York.
This too was, one second. This too was shocking. Page 137 of Bernard Revel, I quote to you from the Boston Jewish Advocate, which greeted the appearance of intercollegiate athletics at Yeshiva College, quote, Rabbi Cohen intercepted a pass from Sivkovich. Rabbi Greenberg raced 80 yards to a touchdown. Rabbi Selkowitz kicked 3 field goals. Headlines such as these may soon be seen on the sporting pages as the result of the decision of Yeshiva College, America's only Jewish college of liberal arts and sciences, to go in for intercollegiate athletics.
What's the date of this Boston trajectory?
1934. As a beginning, Yeshiva College has organized a basketball team. Next spring, it is planned to have baseball and track teams, and ultimately a football team. We look forward eagerly to sitting in the rooting section of the Yankee Stadium to cheer on the first Yeshiva college football team. Ra, ra, Yeshiva. Now, you see what's happening here? It's a tremendous period of readjustment.
Not Hellenization.
When Alon Shvud opened and built the campus, they built a tremendous basketball court. This building, right in back, we had a beautiful basketball court when BMT was there. I don't know what goes on today. We had a regular schedule of basketball games. There are even Haredi yeshiva today that have sports facilities. And it's recognized, the healthy mind, the healthy body. A young person needs athletics. You have to be more than just confined to the Dalet Amot of a Beis HaMidrash. And then we have this recognition today. But back in the 1930s, this was revolutionary. Who heard of yeshiva boys, a basketball team, a baseball team, a fencing squad? Revolutionary. The football team never really came to reality. I think part of that, I may be overestimating the influence of Rav Lessen, but the mashgiach of the yeshiva in my time would speak time and again against football. And he considered that a Hellenistic sport. Why? Because min dahagetzer eina d'andera. You knock everyone up, you kill each other. It's football, you punch them, you beat into them. Baseball is a cleaner sport, at least it should be. Fencing, no one can get hurt, you wear protection. But somehow fencing, European, it was a tradition, didn't have the same opposition. Basketball certainly should be a cleaner sport. But football never materialized. Maybe that's the reason. I don't know.
I tried Little League football in seventh grade.
Right.
Didn't land Saturday. Tried it out. Tackling practice, I was not that great. So I dove at this guy. I hear a crack. I took off my helmet. There was a hole like this in the helmet.
That was the end.
Not my sport.
That was the end. That was the end. Okay. Let me go one step further.
Do any of the posters deal with this issue?
A book came out in Beit Shemesh. A fellow named David Eisen, he's a Talmud of mine, a very well-known lawyer, has a son who was born and bred in Beit Shemesh. And the kid is a runner, outstanding runner. For the young man's bar mitzvah, he issued a volume on sports and halacha. And writings, he serves as an introduction to the volume, where I talk about the Meshitta. And you can contact David Eisen and get the volume, and he brings down all the halachic literature that has been published on this topic. There also is material published, Ari Schwat, Natan Ophir of Hebrew University, Ari Schwat of the College for Women in Elkanah. What's it called? Orot. Thank you. I thought of it before you said it, but thank you. Orot. They too have published Habriyut on Rav Kook in sports. And it seems Rav Kook had a very positive attitude that it's the rebirth of the Jewish people that we participate in all these challenges to humanity. And it comes back to what the Rav said, Ger v'toshav anochi imachem, that we can take out of the toshav that which is healthy. So there is quite a bit written, but nevertheless you can see where it's an adjustment, and you can see where it causes for the first time, you're going to have criticisms of yeshiva that they're not shrewd enough. Popular language. Follow me?
Now that you mentioned Rav Kook, remind me, Philip Goodman used to play basketball about the Mecca Zavav Yeshiva on Friday afternoons, met with the boys from the Hebrew University in the early 30s, and played basketball.
Okay, so that's your answer.
And they asked Rav Kook, he used to come and watch.
That's Rav Kook, absolutely. Yes, Danny.
I think Jeffrey Gurak has an article about comparing rebels and Rav Kook's visions of sports.
Yeah, yes, I know he has a book on sports in America, and your uncle was very, your great uncle, was not happy with him, of course.
I think he has one comparing the religious implications.
Where was the article published?
In tradition,
but not sure. Yes, if you come up with it, bring it to class. Very interesting. But on his book on sports, your uncle ripped him apart. You know the story. Jeffrey develops the idea that playing ball was part of the Americanization process. So that a kid like Duvi Hartman played ball to show he's not a greenhorn like his father. So Duvi got up and spoke and said, what's he talking about? I played ball because every kid in the block played ball. It had nothing to do with great theological or philosophical or anthropological considerations. We played ball because every kid in Brooklyn played ball. Okay, gentlemen, one more point today and set the stage for next week, which, frankly, if someone offers you $10 million, I wouldn't miss class. I'll tell you why in a minute. In order to bring yeshiva and yeshiva college to fruition, Rabbi Revel needed a first-rate faculty. And he appealed to Jewish professors who were well-known, Gentiles who were Ohavei Yisrael, and the initial faculty of Yeshiva College was superb. Many of them were not full-time. They took on 2 to 4 hours additional a week teaching. They were at Columbia University. They were at City College, which was then a fabulous college. They were at the University of Pennsylvania. But they wanted to help Yeshiva and Yeshiva College. As I mentioned, Dr. Joseph Shipley was of tremendous help in gathering faculty. There was one other person who plays a key role in the initial structure of Yeshiva College. His name at that time, Dr. Shelley Safier. S-A-F-I-R. Obviously, Safier. The Safier who wrote for the New York Times for many decades, I believe was a nephew to Dr. Shelley. Dr. Shelley Safier later changes his name, and if you mention it to your grandparents, you say Safier, they'll say, there was never a Safier on the yeshiva faculty in my time. Tell Rakefid he is a dummy, an idiot, to the second power. He changed his name to Sapphire. S-A-P-H-I-R-E. So that you'll ask your grandparents, Shelley Sapphire, oh, of course, he was principal of the high school, he was professor of biology. Who didn't know the name Shelley Sapphire?
Is he related to William Sapphire?
He changed the name to Sapphire. The original name is Safier. Who wrote for the New York Times? What name is it? Safier?
William Sapphire.
I believe there was a Safier who wrote for the New York... It could be I'm wrong that it's... But anyway, it was a nephew. They played with the name. Gentlemen, we have arrived. Next week, I don't want to be Aaron Rakefid, because I don't want to get into trouble. Let Yitzchak Shachar bear the burden. For the first time in my life, I will reveal the scandal that shook at the roots of Yeshiva College in its early formative years. Fascinating story. I will explain for the first time Rabbi Revel's decision and try to justify it. Anyone alive from that period, and I don't know if there's anyone alive today who recalls and remembers, Rabbi Revel was under heavy criticism, but I will explain it next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. You will understand why Sapphire became Sapphire. There are reasons why. I wouldn't miss next week's share, as I said, for even a $5 million startup fund. My dear students, to reiterate, I want to greet the students listening all over the world. I didn't greet you at the start of this year. Let me greet at this moment, and let me thank the Ribbono Shel Olam. If you would know how bad I felt yesterday, and thank God I'm on the way to recovery, and it's my own fault. I'm ashamed. I always know I have to pace myself, and I did not pace myself. I undertook too much. But Be'ezrat Hashem will learn from this. And Mikavel Nelech Mikhail El Chayil. What did we do today? We finished out the Harry Fishel story. For the time being, we're going to come back to Harry Fishel in a year or two when we deal with the big three, not the big three laymen, but the big three Rabbanim, Rabbis Goldstein, Lukstein, and Young. And I don't know how Chaim has such schuyot. All that blood is in his veins. Amazing. You don't know, we have other people in the shir who are in America right now. And because of the shir, he found out that his grandchildren are direct descendants of Rabbi Bernard Illaway, the first real Rav in America. And he sits right there, but he's in America now for a wedding. So we then went in to what happened with Yeshiva. The Columbus, Ohio rabbi, Rabbi Grunwald, Leopold Grunwald in English, that critique is fascinating. It's a favaf and a source. How I know about it is, I remembered that in the Kolbo from Avelot, I once found something crazy, and I made a note of it on the first page of the book, and I said, this is fabulous. Of course, it's tangible. It shows you the thesis versus antithesis. That's what's going on in Israel today. And we're going to come out of it with a beautiful synthesis. Don't let the naysayers get you down. Look into the Rambam, Hilchot Malachim, Perek Yud Bet, Halacha Bet. But you have to admit, opening a yeshiva college, Einstein, Lehman, could you imagine giving an honorary degree to the president of Temple Emanuel? Like Sapna with Yankala Schiff. It's a problem. I'm not paskining. You have to feel. You each one can have their own conclusion, their own synthesis. Thank God the problem is not so prevalent today. Sports. Silikovic running a touchdown. Wow. Rakefet hitting a Grand Slam home run. Oh, that's a dream. In Salanti, you should know, I hit a triple to bring in the two winning runs in one of our famous games. And we took a picture afterwards, looking like the Yankees. Everyone, the first row, the second row, the nine players. Wow. I look at that picture, half of them are gone already. That's life. The faculty. Sapphire. Shelley. Did a doctorate on the asexual reproduction of the tsetse fly at Columbia University, a doctorate in biology. We all used to laugh, but that's what he did the doctorate on, the asexual reproduction of the tsetse fly. Gentlemen, a comment on the homosexual issue. which comes to the fore in dialogue. I just want to quote a Gemara to you in Chulin Daf Tzadi Bet Omer Aleph. Never forget this Gemara. It's at the bottom of the page. The Gemara says that there are three concepts that B'nai Noah took upon themselves, which they still observe in Chul today. One concept, She'ein Shoklin Basa Hameit B'Mekulin. You know what that means? They may be cannibals, but they don't sell the meat in a butcher shop. All right, it's nice of them. One concept, Shemechabdim Et HaTorah. And I have to tell you, this is a very delicate question. As a rabbi, who did I have more in common with? Jews who were totally removed from any Torah observance, or a believing Gentile? And these believing Gentiles, the derech eretz they have for a rabbi is indescribable. Time and again, as a rabbi, when I use the title, I'd meet Gentiles, took reservations from me. Phone operators, which you don't even know what that's about today. Oh, rabbi, what else can we do for you? It's true. You take President Bush, the last president of the Bush family, his derech eretz for Torah was indescribable. And there are reasons why. I've spoken about it. He could never understand why there's a Reform Judaism. But the third thing that the Gentiles did, She'ein kotvin ketubah l'zacharim. And look into the Parishim, look into Rashi, etc. It's not that there wasn't homosexuality exists, but they never gave it legislative dignity. They never made it legal. She'ein kotvin ketubah. And take a look today what we have. And that Gemara, I believe, says it all. And as I said, with dialogue, I have real problems with the Mitzitza B'Peh. The only problem I have with the homosexual part is they're not fair to YU. As I said yesterday, there should be a footnote on Rabbi Moshe David Tendler supporting Rabbi Norman Lamb. If anyone is interested, this is a photograph of a publication of a Maimonides Day School, but it's not the one from Boston, it's from Albany, New York. It's a Chabad elementary school, or a Chabad elementary and high school. It's in English, basically, and there's a nice article here on Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman's visit to America, and we spoke about him yesterday, and where he stayed in Albany. Finally, and I didn't know that Chaim Steppelman, Rabbi Steppelman, was coming to the class today, but this picture, I have to tell you, is unbelievable. What should be done with the picture? How many other people can be identified? I think this is next to Harry Fischel. I think that's Mr. Nathan Lamport, and that may be Mr. Sam Lamport next to him. But it would be very interesting to see if Mr. Gottesman is in here. This may be Mr. Gottesman right here. This may be Mr. Gottesman. This may be Lamport. It needs someone who could identify. What I did accomplish with the picture in the new edition, or the article that appeared in B'Mishpacha and Rabbi Goldstein, we identified all the rabbis in that picture of Rabbi Jacobowitz's installation as the rabbi of the Fifth Avenue Synagogue. Every last one we were able to identify. It took a while, and I told people who to ask, and finally Rabbi Haskell Lookstein identified the last person that we were missing. My dear students, once again, if anyone wants to borrow this, I'm happy to lend it to you, and you can pass it around, give it back to me when you're finished. Until we meet again in health and happiness, and remember next week, don't talk about it aloud, but Rakefet / Shachar will deal with the black scandal in yeshiva's history. As far as I know, it is the worst scandal ever. And if we consider that yeshiva was organized in 1886, it's pretty good that in 150 plus years, only one scandal of any consequence and gossip. Until we meet again in health and happiness, das vidanya. Thank you very much.